Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Anna Marquardt. Anna, thank you for joining me.
Hello.
Hello. That was a very enthusiastic hello. Why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself, Anna?
I am one of the, I guess the reason I'm on this podcast at all is I'm one of the writers of Fashion It So, which is, we like to say we're the preeminent Star Trek fashion blog on the internet. I assume there are more, but we write about TNG fashions, and actually we write our posts in a random order also. We don't go in any particular order, which means now we're getting to the end of the series, so we've got a lot of uniform only episodes and two-parters that we're both sort of reluctant to do.
This is like the Dregs.
And are dragging our feet a little bit. Yeah, we've gotten through a ton of, I think we have maybe 20 episodes left to do.
That is impressive. Maybe.
Yeah, so we've been doing it for a while, but that's sort of my Trek thing. And both of us, my co-writer, Charlie, we're both writers professionally as well.
Yeah, and I was wondering, as we watch this episode, The Quality of Life, which is season 6, episode 9 for people keeping track at home, because I was watching it with the lens of knowing about your blog, obviously, and there's not a lot of fashion in this episode.
Yeah. So I actually went back and looked at the post, because I had written the post for this episode.
Excellent.
So I went back and looked at my own post to remind myself, and then, you know, watch the episode, of course. But I did think that was funny as well, that it was one of those episodes where there's just kind of one main non-Enterprise person and they just wear the same thing for the whole episode.
And it's not, I'm no fashion plate myself, but what she wears, Dr. Farlong, not very interesting.
Yeah, not a ton going on. It's a very TNG look, though. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of people who have that sort of like, it's sort of solid all the way down. And then there's some sort of interest at the top or the shoulders. And it's like a completely matching dress and pants.
Yes.
So it is a very sort of like indicative look for a lot of those types of characters who just sort of show up and are in the same look for the whole thing.
Yeah, you would think they would change. But she's a scientist. She's busy.
Yeah,
with
she's
her,
got other stuff
her
going on.
Particle fountain. She doesn't have time for for such things. And looking disapprovingly at
such
Geordi.
Frivolities.
That's right. And defending her use of possibly sentient robots. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Now, I'm going to make an assumption, and you should correct me if I'm wrong. But given the topic of your blog is a TNG focus, that would lead me to believe that TNG is perhaps your favorite variant of Star Trek. Is that correct?
Yeah, you would be correct. Yes. That is the one that I watched it as a kid. I was a tween and a teen in the 90s when it was on. And I watched it with my family, and then Charlie and I sort of started watching it together because he had also grown up watching it. And that was how the blog sort of started, was that we were like, well, let's revisit this and see if we're still into it. And so part of my enjoyment of it is nostalgia of watching it as a kid. And now it's grown into like a genuine, I love all of the characters. And obviously it has its hits and misses, like any TV series that runs for as long as it did. But I genuinely just love it and love the world that they create and the crew and their whole sort of vibe.
It is a good vibe. And that can be dangerous to revisit childhood favorites, as I have found. Not with Star Trek, because I've always liked Star Trek. And, you know, I've never really revisited it. I've just always visited. It's always been there. But one of my favorite shows, I may have talked about this on the podcast before, but one of my favorite shows growing up was MacGyver. And then MacGyver, I was very excited when MacGyver came onto Netflix, and I was like, OMG, I can watch this super awesome show. You know what? It's not very good. It just made me question childhood Scott's taste in television.
You know what? Childhood anybody's taste in television is real questionable. So I think we all have a We all have shows like that.
It is true. And speaking of questionable taste, I want to talk. I want to share a fashion theory I have about TNG. I think that Captain Picard joined Starfleet so that he didn't have to dress himself, because every time we see him out of uniform, he is wearing some kind of interesting outfit.
Well, he wears these silky blouses several times, where there's one when he goes to visit his brother in the vineyard. Mm-hmm. And then there's one where he's hanging out with Vosh in that episode. They're like in a cave, but he's wearing this like very inappropriate for spelunking, like flow blouse that has a crossover in front. And then of course there's like the short robe, which is like iconic. But yeah, I can see where he's like the kind of guy who, if he lived now, he would need one of those services where you just tell them what your style is and they send you clothes in the mail, and then he just puts them on. So yeah, I can see that theory being solid.
Patrick Stewart is a handsome man, so he and people should really wear whatever they want. I'm not judging. I question some of his choices. Captain Picard enjoys a flowy top and tight pants, and who am I to tell him that he shouldn't?
That's very on trend right now. It's just a tunic and leggings.
Oh, see, there you go. Even in the future, who knew? So what do I know? I don't know. I wear Hawaiian shirts, so I should not be casting any stones because I live in a glass house or something. I don't know.
Everybody wear what you like. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't. But now this is my question to you to along that. So TNG, we have seen most of the characters, I think, except maybe not Data, kind of in out of uniform and wearing kind of civilian garb. So who amongst the crew has the best fashion sense?
In your
opinion, of course.
In my opinion. I think Beverly has some sweaters that I really, really enjoyed.
Mm.
She has this sort of like sweater dress that's sort of off the shoulder. I enjoyed that. Troy actually has, in the beginning of the series, she has these several jumpsuits. Because you know how they never like put her in a uniform until later, and she's wearing these like sort of a uniform. So she actually got an interesting opportunity to be in something that was a uniform shape, but like had cool fabrics and cool colors. There's one episode where she wears, it's the exact same jumpsuit, and it has this like added interest sort of belt thing with an arrow pointing to a sensitive area.
Oh.
But she wears the same jumpsuit in like three different colorways in like one episode, where it's like one is gray with a green belt and one is like a cool pink thing with a gray belt. And so I think that's always an interesting thing to look at, is she has these interesting looks that are like uniform-ish, but not actually uniform, because of the way that they, you know, sort of treat her like a senior officer, but like not really. And then like she does get to be a senior officer. So I think she has some interesting stuff. And then of course Riker has the best pajamas.
Well, that's no question. Who
like that's just a given.
And one imagines that when he is not in his uniform, he's just always in pajamas.
Always in pajamas. Yeah.
Because that's just the kind of guy Riker is.
Yeah, he's keeping it real chill and ready for whatever.
That's right.
Pajamas.
That is correct. He has a trombone nearby just in case, because you never know.
Trombone emergencies can happen anytime.
That's right. And Riker is on it. And it's interesting. I haven't given when I see an episode of Star Trek and they have, you know, they visit some civilization that we've never seen, they of course have wacky outfits on. But what I've never given too much thought to, except in this very moment, is kind of the paralysis I would feel when trying to dress myself in Star Trek, because they have replicators, so they can
replicators. I know
anything they want.
Anything you want, yeah. You can just say anything, any color, whatever. Yeah, when it occurred to me that must be how they make their uniforms. Well, I was listening to the episode about Rascals, and you guys remarked on how they made the uniforms for the little guys and like Guinan's little hat. And I thought that was, and of course that episode is, I liked your discussion of that episode. It was funny, but, Guinan's getting a little tiny Guinan hat from the replicator was just like so delightful.
Well, if it's there, you might as well do it. That's what I say. And I will say I hadn't, Guinan, of course, always has interesting customs. She has a look she's going. And I guess
she has a look.
That's what you have to do. You just pick your look. That's why Captain Picard, he is overwhelmed with choice and he liked a blousy, flowy top once. Yeah. And that's his computer just like, keeps giving it to him.
Yeah.
Or you just wear your uniform like they do at the beginning of this episode. See, that's a pro podcast transition right there.
Nicely done.
Because the start of this episode, I think maybe,
oh my gosh,
my favorite start of any episode of Star Trek The Next Generation that I could think of.
I had forgotten that this was the cold open and I was so delighted.
And it has nothing to do with the rest of this episode.
It's not even like a thematic thing where they're trying to draw a parallel between what's going on in the main plot and the cold open, which that sometimes happens where it's not really related, but you can see why they did it. But this one is just poker.
They were playing poker and beards. What more do you need? And as a bearded fellow, I enjoyed it. And apparently, according to Memory Alpha, LeVar Burton wanted to, according to the way Memory Alpha puts it, is LeVar Burton had to have a beard for his wedding. I feel like he just wanted to have a beard for his wedding. I'm not quite sure.
You don't have to do anything for your wedding.
That's right.
It's your wedding. You can just do what you like, but that's funny.
And so Geordi has a beard in this episode because LeVar Burton wanted to have a beard for his wedding. And that more power to him. And he looks good with a beard.
I think he looks great. Yeah.
He should have kept it, but he does not. And that's where we get this. So it's Worf and Geordi and Riker, all of which are bearded in one degree or another. They're playing poker with Beverly Crusher, who is, of course, not bearded. Although I shouldn't say of course, but we know Beverly Crusher is not bearded. And they talk about beards, and Beverly basically says it's an affectation. And everybody is, everyone but Geordi is deeply offended by this idea.
Very offended. My goodness.
And I feel like, you know what, as a guy who has a beard, it is an affectation.
Well, I do think affectation might be strong. It's just a choice. It's just a face choice.
It's true.
I think everybody makes face choices. And
it's your face. And, do what you want with it.
Face. And many people have the opportunity to, if you're like, I don't know, I feel like what's going on with my face, I'm going to change it. There's different ways to do that, and I think a beard is just one of them.
That is true. It is not an option for everybody, but if you could do it, I say go for it. Because as I'm saying this, I am stroking my beard thoughtfully. But
Full support.
That's
full
right.
Full support. All beards.
I am in the beard lobby, though, so it could be. I'm in the pocket of Big Beard. It's very cozy in there. But it's a great scene, and this is one of the things that I love about The Next Generation and Star Trek in general, because I think that what attracts me to Star Trek is kind of the characters and the interactions. And this scene, like, there's no point to this scene other than they are enjoying each other's company.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, and teasing each other and getting right to that. If Crusher loses the bet, she has to go brunette. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a... It is. I think it's not quite a perfect analog because dyeing your hair is much more involved than just shaving off a beard, I will say.
Well, I have never dyed my hair, but I imagine. But then that made me think, like, in the future, I'm sure people will change their hair color. But I imagine they have, like, you go through the transporter, and the transporter could resequence your hair, one imagines, and you come out with different hair.
So you just have a little hair sequencer.
Exactly. And then you have a different color hair. You could even have a different kind of hair if you wanted, one assumes. I don't know if that's a valid use of a transporter.
I think there is an episode where Crusher and Troy go to the like spa on the Enterprise, and
someone is
getting some sort of spa treatment in the background, and they might have a color change hair.
And there is a barber on the Enterprise, we know, yes. So he must do something. I don't know. But then I got to thinking about, because Dr. Crusher talks about how women have to put on, or don't have to, but can put on makeup and, right. And that. And I thought that made me think, well, in the future, will makeup still be a thing? But then I thought, of course, it is, because I think when properly looked at, someone is putting makeup on for themselves, not for other people, right?
Right, yeah.
And so it's in an ideal scenario, you're doing it because you want to do it, not because you...
Yeah.
Exactly. So then because I had this moment of thought, well, maybe it's outrageous that women are still being forced to put makeup on in the future. and then I talked myself out of that very quickly. Because I thought...
Yeah, and humans have had makeup forever. Like, people have been doing something on their face, whether it's to signify something to other people or to enhance their beauty, whatever that means to whoever it is at whatever moment in history, mm-hmm. or just to have fun and do something creative and it just happens to be on your face. I will quote a very good movie, Burlesque, starring Cher and Christina Aguilera.
Hmm.
And when you put on makeup, it's like you're doing a painting, except your face is the canvas.
Oh. Words of wisdom from Cher or Christina Aguilera. I don't know who said it.
It was Cher, of course.
Well, of course. I would guess. If I had to guess, I would have guessed Cher. I have not seen that movie. But maybe I'll seek it out.
Good. It's actually not good.
I'm not going to look at it. But I think I was thinking about that in the context because I've been watching or rewatching Deep Space Nine with my wife. And one of the things that she finds quite annoying is that Keiko O'Brien took Miles O'Brien's last name.
What's his last name? Oh.
And she doesn't think in the future that women would do that.
That would actually happen.
Yes. So she finds that unbelievable. And of course, my response to that is, you're okay with everything else in the show.
But that's your point of contention.
Exactly. And then, well, she didn't take my last name, so it's a whole thing. Not that I thought she should, but, you know, I don't know. I think it's a choice. And in the future, much like makeup, if you want to do it, do it.
Yeah, I think, everybody figures out what works for them.
That's right.
So, yeah.
We've probably spent too much time talking about this particular scene, but it ends with the bet unresolved because they get called away by Captain Picard in a slightly odd moment because he says all senior staff to the bridge, and everybody in that room is senior staff, but Beverly Crusher doesn't go to the bridge.
Doesn't go,
Which I thought was weird, but... I guess she knows somehow that she's not required. So
She's got stuff to do in sick bay.
That's right. And I would have, because this is before they reveal their hands, if I were Beverly, I would have looked at everybody's cards, but she does not do that.
Yeah, she has a really strong reaction to the game-like ending, so I think she had a really strong hand.
I think so,
because she sort of, like, puts on this face like, oh, man, why did we get called to the bridge? So, yeah.
Yes, and I would have enjoyed – and Worf, we should say Worf looks the most unsettled by the idea that he might have to shave off his beard because he contends that it's a Klingon sign of strength or something. So he's not happy with the possibility that it might – in fact, he didn't even agree to the bet. Geordi agrees for everybody.
That's true. Yeah.
And Geordi just grew his. He's not attached to it, so what does he care?
Yeah. Worf is not having any of it.
But surprisingly, non-beard related things also happen in this episode.
We spent so much time talking about beards. Okay.
Good night, everybody. But yes, the real thing, if you know anything, if you know this episode for any reason other than the first scene with the beards, is the exocomp. And is it alive or not? And it seems to me, well, I'll set up the basic thrust of the story and then we can just kind of jump around. But the Enterprise shows up to this particle cannon stream beam thing that's going to revolutionize mining, apparently. But Captain Picard has to decide if it's something the Federation should be interested in. It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to me that Captain Picard would decide
Picard
that.
He's like, thumbs up, and then Federation will,
What is his qualifications for deciding this? I mean, he's very smart, but is he a particle fountain expert? I'm just saying somebody else might have been able to make that call.
Right.
But
maybe a science person.
Yes. So Geordi goes over to check it out and talks with the woman who invented this, Dr. Farallon. Geordi seems quite suspicious of the whole thing. Dr. Farallon is what I like to call a prickly pear with Geordi. She doesn't seem very happy that he's there. And then she says, oh, look at my little robot. And she shows up the exocomp. And Geordi's like, this is much more interesting than your stupid particle fountain. And they beam over to the Enterprise with the exocomp. And then Dr. Farallon meets Data. And she's like, whoa, Data, you're much more interesting than stupid Geordi. And so she, Geordi. I know they have a little moment. Geordi is very sad. And there is a scene with what I think is very funny of Dr. Farallon and Data having this very detailed technical conversation, which Geordi could totally, you know, participate in because he is the chief engineer.
He knows what's going on.
He knows what's going on. But instead, he's like four steps behind them, very morosely holding this cute little robot.
They're so cute. And I really think that is an important part of the whole are they alive argument, because they designed them to be so cute and they have the little feet that they don't even need because they float anyway. Like they don't like, and I don't, yeah, they have the little wiggle things on their, on the top. And yeah, I just, they made them as cute as they could be with those sort of design specs.
They're super cute, and I'm glad you mentioned the feet, because the feet don't make any sense, but they are very cute.
Right. They make them look like a little, like, some little cute creature.
That's like a little robot bunny or something. They're very cute. And this is, so they have exhibited puzzling behavior, these exocomps. But before we get into that, Dr. Farallon explains to Data, and begrudgingly to Geordi, because he's kind of hanging out there. He's clearly the third wheel here in this exocomp explanation, that she, you know, her race, although I don't know what she is, but she's something. She's one of these. She has a different forehead, so that's how you know she's an alien.
A beautiful lady with some forehead prosthetic.
Exactly. That's her. That's what alien she is. Narrows it down to 14,000 aliens on TNG. And she says, you know, we have these devices all over the place, and but I gave this one upgrades. It can, and this is when I wrote in my notes, seems very dangerous, because this is a robot that has a built-in replicator that can self-modify at will, which seems like a bad idea.
Does not seem like that is something that you want, having free reign over your, any part of it, your plasma fountain. What is it? Particle fountain.
Particle fountain. Yeah.
Spaceship or anything. Yeah.
No good.
I mean, it's a smart way to design something that needs a lot of tools, but it's also a bad way to design something that's constantly learning and changing its own programming to suit a scenario.
Yes.
Especially something that is, it's sort of not following the laws of robotics. So
no, it's just kind of like hovering around. And it has feet that it doesn't use because it hovers everywhere.
Hovers everywhere.
Yeah. So it just seems like not a great idea on her part to just give it, you know, I'm on board with giving it the tool, the ability to create the tools for the task. Right. That's very smart. But she does say it can just change itself based on.
It just does whatever it wants.
And I was like, really, doctor? This seems like it might be a bad idea.
It's like, well, weren't the whole thing with Furbies that they could learn, and then like some of them learned to say.
Oh yes.
This is like that, but that's worse because it's tools.
And Furby's also kind of cute. I think that
also kind of cute. Yeah.
The exocomp might be cuter than a Furby.
I actually think they're cuter than Furbies.
Because Furbies are like they're borderline creepy, I think.
Yeah, those eyes were a little creepy. Yeah.
Yes. So that's what you, if you're listening now, I'd rather have an exocomp than a Furby. They can both learn, but the exocomp is cuter. Now let's take a moment to thank our sponsor, Casper. Casper is a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfort sleep experience one night at a time. That's how I sleep, one night at a time. Casper now has three mattress models, the original Casper, the Wave, and the Essential. Casper mattresses are perfectly designed to soothe and cradle your natural geometry. Not to mention the breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night, which is super important. And, best of all, it's delivered right to your door in a small how-do-they-do-that size box with free shipping and returns in the United States of America and our neighbors to the north, Canada. But the best part is that you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial. After all, you spend one-third of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable. I think I might spend slightly more than a third of my life sleeping, but you probably are more productive than I do. Now, you're probably asking yourself, Scott, can I get some sort of random Trek discount for the Casper mattress? Well, of course you can. You can get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/trek and using Trek at the checkout. That is T-R-E-K, Trek. That's casper.com/trek, offer code TREK, for $50 off your mattress purchase. And, you know, terms and conditions do apply. My thanks to Casper for supporting Random Trek. And so, long story short, Data, the ExoComp, goes off to do something on the space or the particle fountain, and it leaves and refuses to do an order. And then there's a big explosion, and Data thinks, oh, maybe it's sentient. I wanted to talk to you about this because they never use the word sentient.
Right. They keep saying alive.
Which I think is the wrong word to use.
Which I don't think is correct because that's not... sentient is the correct word.
Yes. Because there's a scene where... So this is the whole point of the episode. Is it... are these things alive? Although right. Sentient really is the thing. And if they are, we shouldn't force them to do work because... they are sentient beings. And so Data, having had the same exact experience, you know, it's a very kind of touching thing for him to figure this out and stand up for them and all that. So that's great. But I just am puzzled by, because part of this is Data trying to figure out if they're alive or not. So he goes to Dr. Crusher and says, how do you define life?
Right.
Which is a huge question.
She takes this beat where she's just like, okay. Okay. Like, we're going to get into this right now? Okay. And they go into her office.
They do. And interesting, and this is another thing that I probably wouldn't have noticed if I didn't look at Memory Alpha, because usually when you go into her office, her blinds are closed behind her desk. They are open in this, and we see through her windows that the view she has is of a random corridor. Seems strange. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But I don't know if I like the fact that Dr. Crusher is – I like the fact that she takes the question seriously because it is a big question. And right. Data's her friend and her coworker, right? So yeah. It's important. But she doesn't ask the obvious question, which is there's something going on here, Data. Why are you asking this question?
Right. Like this isn't – Data doesn't ask things – I mean, you know, he's always trying to find out how to be more human or whatever. But – there's a reason he's asking this question. And she's just like, well, let's just talk about life in general.
That's right. So that's, you know, Wesley Crusher, who's my son. I don't know why I said Wesley Crusher, because he's my son, you know, but has asked me the similar thing. And this is what I tell him and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, this is lovely conversation. But really, the obvious question is, why do you need to know this, Data? What have you done? But she doesn't ask that. They have this little philosophical question, a philosophical conversation that really doesn't go anywhere because basically she says, well, life is, you know, one could define it as something that needs fuel to live and can reproduce, right. Basically. And Data's like, well, that's not me, but what about fire? And she's like, well, fire. And then you're like, yes, I know. We could be like this forever. Clearly, it's a poor definition. And the thing you're looking for is sentience, Data, not living. So
they're not alive.
But you are.
Even if they're sentient beings, they're still not alive.
Exactly. Sorry. And that's okay.
Okay. It still doesn't, you know, we should still respect them and not force them to do work they don't want to do. But
exactly.
Never going to be alive.
Never going to be alive. It is the same moral quandary, except you're using the right term. And that's. I think this episode, spoiler alert, I like this episode, but that word choice just annoyed me the entire time.
It's a weird way to go about that debate.
Yes, and I don't understand why they did it. But anyway, that's what they do. Dr. Crusher doesn't really help because it's the wrong question to ask anybody anyway, so it's not her fault. But he does say, oh, maybe you're right. And off he goes to tell everybody, basically, I think these things are alive.
They're alive.
And Dr. Farallon is totally like, she went from, so, you know, you have to... In context, she basically was like a Data fangirl, right?
Yeah.
She's like, I studied your positronic brain. You're amazing. Let's talk about all this stuff. And so I took that as, well, she probably has deep respect for Data and his opinions. But sure. As soon as he says this, she's like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Which is such a weird – she was such a weird character because she has a – I feel like if I invented something and then somebody was like, I think you invented something that's alive, actually, I'd be like, I'm amazing. I'd be like, this is so much more than I could have expected. Like, mm-hmm. And she's like, no, they're not alive. Like, and then at another point, she has this line where she says something about, I guess I don't have that conservative streak that most scientists have. And I was like, that's not what scientists have. Like, scientists have, they all want to climb to the next branch of the tree. Like, that's the whole, like, scientists, if you're a scientist, you're always looking for new answers and asking new questions. And she just seems like she is not interested. She's not interested in even entertaining the question that Data brings up, which is, just feels so anti-science to me.
Yes. And you would think that she'd be like, I am their god now. I am amazing. I guess you could explain it away as she is focused on this particle fountain.
Right. She's worried about the particle fountain, and the exocomps are a tool to make that work.
Exactly.
And them being alive is a roadblock. She doesn't want to deal with
that's right. She's like, you're not here for these exocomps. I don't know why I showed them to you. Let us focus on the particle fountain, Captain Picard. For some reason, you are the one that's going to decide my fate.
Look at my particle fountain
that's
and
right.
judge it.
Yes, judge my particle fountain, Captain Picard. This is the moment you've been waiting for, the reason you were born. And sadly, the first time Captain Picard goes to visit the particle fountain, things go horribly wrong.
It's not great. It's not great.
It is not good for not looking good for her particle fountain. But yeah, she's weird. She as a character, she is like, I don't like Geordi. I like you, Data, until you've decided that my exocomps are alive. I don't believe you. This is stupid. Let's only have one test to figure out if these things are alive or not.
Right.
And they have the test of the exocomp. Fails it, or does it?
Meaningly.
Oh, that's right, but it doesn't. It's. I wrote in my notes, I'd seen this episode before, but in my notes I wrote, you can't fool an exocomp.
The exocomp saw right through your test.
Exactly. Their test was to make it think that the Jeffries tube it was in was going to explode, but it wasn't going to. And it knew that, so it ignored it. Data is obsessed with, because he feels like he's right, but he has no proof that he's right. So he after everybody leaves, he does it 35 more times, which is, that's a total Data thing to do, with the same results over and over again. Along comes Dr. Crusher. I forget even why she was there, but just to distract him, really.
Say hi.
Say, hey, what's going on, Data? And they have a chat, and he's sad, Data doesn't have emotions, but he seems disappointed that the exocomp is apparently not alive, sentient. And Dr. Crusher's distracting him, and then the exocomp comes back, and she's like, oh, look, your exocomp is back, Data. And he says, that's strange, I didn't call it back. And then he's like, aha, it is alive.
Aha, it figured out the simulation. It knew.
That's right. And now it can come back on its own. I don't know. Dr. Farallon is not so happy about this. Captain Picard. That's what he is. He's not a doctor. Goes over to check out the particle fountain. And everything goes wrong on the particle fountain station, I guess. I don't know really what it is. Everybody's going to die. They need to get off quickly. Captain Picard. And this is the other thing that I thought was weird, right? And maybe they set this up and this is why Dr. Farallon does not like Geordi, because when Geordi, at the beginning, he beams over to the particle fountain, and he's just kind of like running the place. Like, he's never been there before, but right.
He's bossing people around.
He's bossing people around. He's like typing on the consoles and stuff. And you're like, Geordi, you don't know anything about this particle fountain. What are you doing? And I bring this up because Captain Picard comes over to basically judge their work, even though he is wholly unqualified to do so. And there's an emergency. And this is when Captain Picard is qualified to do things, right. Because he is a captain. This is what he does. So he takes over, and he basically, because Dr. Farallon is like, no, we can fix it. And Captain Picard is like, you get all your people off, and you have to beam away right now. And she's like, okay, fine. And so off they go, except there's one person missing. Of course there is. So Geordi has to go find him, and Captain Picard won't leave Geordi behind, so he transports everybody else to the Enterprise, and then he runs off to find Geordi. The person Geordi went to find is dead, and this is all to set up the fact that now they are trapped on the particle fountain, and they're going to die.
Get a pattern.
No patterns.
The transporter won't work. That's now. Right.
And a key point which they did not make is that I guess they can't transport out, but they can transport things in?
Right. I guess.
Because otherwise this episode does not work at all.
Does that make sense? At all?
And so now they need to – the big crisis, right, is we have to save Captain Picard and Geordi. But every option they have is going to take too long because they have like 23 minutes or something like that. Until Dr. Farallon says, hey, remember these alive robots I have? What if we just chuck them in front of the particle fountain? that'll totally fix the problem for some reason. everybody's
if
like,
we boop-bop them and then put them there, everything's fine.
Everybody, it'll be great. And everybody's on board with this, except for Data, who says, hey, remember, they're alive. We can't really just do this. Riker is like, maybe we can. And Data says, well, they'll just disable themselves if they are put into danger. To which Dr. Farallon says, which I thought this was very not cool on her part. She's like, well, I'll just disconnect their controls.
Oh, yeah. I'll just lobotomize them.
That's right. And then they won't be able to do it.
Then don't worry about it.
And I was like, man, that's not right. But Riker is like, okay. Because he wants to save.
Yeah, well, he wants Picard and Geordi back on the ship, which
that's
I get.
Right. Like, I get it.
He doesn't know these robots.
These are like new robots.
It's like a weird space version of the trolley problem. Like,
that's true.
We can sacrifice these robots, I don't know, to save my captain and my friend Geordi.
And to be fair to Riker, it is uncertain. It seems likely that the exocomps are alive, but it is uncertain if they are. And Picard and Geordi certainly, and this third person who is actually dead, but they don't know that, are certainly alive. So it kind of makes sense. And this is an exciting point at which they're going to transport them. And Data basically disobeys orders and shuts down the transporter. Riker is mad for like 2 seconds. and this is basically this moment. If you have not seen Star Trek Discovery, this moment is what they built the entire series of Star Trek Discovery around, a very similar moment. But here on TNG, it is like 30 seconds and then they are done.
And then it's over.
And basically Data says, oh, what if we, you know, the exocomps, we can just transport them over. We'll put some instructions in them and they'll do this other thing. And Riker's like, okay, fine. And this is when now we find out that they are alive, even though they're sentient. because they're given their orders, but then they're all sitting on the transporter pad, which there are three of them, and they're even cuter just sitting there together looking at one another. It's precious. And they decide they change all of the plans. Because they know the particle fountain better than anybody else.
They've poured it into every part of the particle fountain. So they know more than all the people do.
And so they know how to fix it, or at least make it not blow up, I guess. They also apparently, and nobody seems too concerned about this, but then they are able to set the transporter.
Right.
Which seems a little concerning to me.
They're like, that there's new coordinates and they're in the core. And like, how did they get into the Enterprise computers.
Exactly. That would be my question. It seems
they were on the Wi-Fi. It's an open Wi-Fi.
Well, I have watching a lot of Star Trek. I have come to the conclusion that Starfleet security is abysmal. Anybody can break into those computers. You know, people are opening attachments left and right. They're clicking on links. It's no good. I'm surprised anything works on that ship. You know, anytime you have to transport somebody, there's like five pop-ups that pop up, and just like, ah. But anyway, long story short, the exocomps go over. They fix the whatever technobabble problem is, and they can transport Picard and Geordi back. Hooray, boo, because not all the exocomps survive. One sacrifices itself so that the other two can be beamed aboard the Enterprise. And then, you know, the particle fountain is a failure, but the Dr. Farallon says, well, come back in a year, and maybe Captain Picard can come back again and judge me, maybe. I don't know how this really works, but...
I guess. Like, maybe it was just like, whatever captain is in the area, just go check out this particle fountain.
Yeah, just make sure it works and it's there.
And it doesn't blow up. Too bad. You almost failed that test.
That's right. He has a two-item checklist that he goes over.
Exploding.
I can't check that last one.
Sorry, you did not pass.
You don't get funding from Starfleet. And I will say, the end of this episode, I did mist up a little bit because there's a scene where Data and Captain Picard are talking, and Data basically apologizes because, you know, he was going to sacrifice Picard and Geordi because he didn't want to sacrifice the lives of these exocomps. And Picard says that, you know, I totally understand your decision. It was the most human decision you've ever made. And when he said that, I just got a little teary-eyed.
Oh, I full-on had a tear rolling down my face. And I was like, you did it.
Damn you, Star Trek. And that is Star Trek, I will admit, is a ridiculous thing to watch. But it gets me every time with these kinds of moments.
And it benefits from as much as there's weird, silly stuff in the scripts, everybody on that in the cast is just so committed to making it good that it's hard for me to resist just loving it and buying into everything.
Yes, and I that's why I said, once again, it comes down to the relationship between these characters. Yeah, like I know Data really wants to be a real boy, and Captain Picard is like everybody's dad, and you don't want to disappoint your dad. And he is like, no, Data, you did the exact right thing, and in fact,
the right thing.
That's the most human thing you've ever done. And you're like, oh, man. I was watching
Dad's
this episode.
Proud of me.
Dad's proud of me. That's right. And as I was watching, my wife was sitting next to me, and she said, oh, if Data had emotions and could cry, he'd totally be crying right now. And I said, yes, he does get emotions later. And then she rolled her eyes at me because I got into more Star Trek things that she cared about. But so that is the quality of life. What did you think of it overall as an episode of TNG?
I liked it. I did think that scientist character was a little all over the place, but I liked what our pals had to do. it was a strong Data episode. And we got to see Riker making some decisions that may or may not have been correct, which I feel is like sort of a thing that he does. But I liked it overall. And I think that one of the things I like about the show too is how they sort of address big sort of philosophical questions in a way that's like, they have all this weird techno babble, but it's really about these little cute robots and like what it means to be alive. And I think it's cool that they take that on. And that this episode, I enjoyed this episode.
Yes. And it's not, I feel like Star Trek does this very well, sometimes and sometimes very poorly, but kind of thinking of a big moral issue, and not being kind of preachy about it, but just thinking about it considered thoughtfully is a word I'll use instead of the one I can't say, and making you think about it. And I think this is one
they're
of
not,
the, they're not hitting you over the head with it.
Yeah. They're not trying to be too heavy handed. They're just saying, hey, what about this? And then you're like, whoa, my mind.
Whoa. Even though you're using the wrong word, this is amazing.
You could have said sentient, but it's fine. It's fine. I get what you're doing.
That's right. I'll forgive you. Or will I? No, I won't. It's just weird. But yeah, I think this is a good episode. I say thumbs up. And the exocomp's super cute.
So cute.
Every robot should look like an exocomp. Even Data. Data should just be a giant exocomp.
with Brent Spiner's voice.
Yes. I would pay to. I'm sure that exists somewhere on the internet. Well, Anna, thank you so much for joining me to talk about this episode.
Thank you. This was delightful.
The delight was all mine.